This is Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. Today, we're talking about magic. No, not that type of magic. This kind of magic.
Here is
both his guys.
The Strive Ajani's presence.
This is sound from the end of the 2015 Magic the Gathering Professional World Championships.
Sure, says Flock. He's looking. Here it comes.
Magic the Gathering is a collectible fantasy card game. It's been around since the 1990s, and it's still thriving.
Ooh.
The game has over 20 million fans. It's a $200 million a year industry. And there are some cards that are worth more than the monthly rent for a two-bedroom apartment in San Francisco.
And you are going to see even Flock of the Slovak Republic. You've never seen anyone play a turn so fast. In they come. It's the angels and the sheep for Even Flock, who wins the Pro Tour.
Holy sheep.
That was unreal.
But the game had humble beginnings. It started off as a geeky pastime, an update of Dungeons & Dragons. Remember that? Quaint and a little cheesy, just like this promo from 1995.
Come now, just a little farther. The portal to Dominia is right over there.
But since then, it's become a slick powerhouse.
A world that needs you. Ruled by Khan.
20th Century Fox recently acquired the rights to start a film franchise, and this winter, Magic passed an essential cultural milestone. There was a full episode of South Park lampooning the game.
At one point, Kenny actually polymorphed the dude into a blue frog with an instant attack card. It was carnage, bro!
So how has a 90s game managed to retain its popularity in the smartphone era? KALW's Jeremy Dalmas visited one of the annual local tournaments to check out what makes these cards so resilient.
Suddenly, the peace is broken.
Mountain?
Planeswalker Mike Escalante is amassing his army.
Is that a surfing goblin?
Yeah.
But Planeswalker Matt Wilcox is unfazed. He summons a demon.
This one's called Archfiend of Depravity.
Escalante's reinforcements arrive on horseback just in time.
Warflare?
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy.
And Wilcox admits defeat.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you just lose?
Yes, I did just lose.
Welcome to Magic the Gathering. You are a planeswalker, a wizard who, well, you're actually just a gamer. A gamer who can summon legendary beasts. I mean, collect limited edition cards, build them into decks, and battle opponents. You start the game with 20 life points, and with a hand filled with creature cards and spell cards. You and your opponents take turns using those cards to cast spells against one another, to summon creatures to attack, and to prevent your life points from hitting zero. That's the basics. And the true test of a planeswalker is at one of the traveling tournaments, which, this year, was at the battleground of the San Jose Convention Center.
We have 1,965 players here today. Thank you for coming out and making this a gigantic event.
Welcome to Grand Prix San Jose. Magic tournaments like this one used to be cozy. Look down the convention hall today, and you see hundreds of tables. And every year, there are more. Matt Wilcox may have lost that earlier game, but at this tournament, he has another chance. He's with teammates Michelle Robertson and Mike Kahn. What do these warriors hope to accomplish today?
If we could win 6 of our 9 rounds, I'd be pretty happy.
Well, I guess that's our goal, right?
They get their cards and start amassing clans of horseback warriors and mystical monks. Walk around the tournament and you'll see how dedicated people are to these cards. There's Christine Sprankle, who is dressed up as the character Gisa, a ghoul caller from the game who raises the undead.
I look like a demented bride. It's my wedding attire, and every night's my wedding with my ghouls, so that's my weekend.
There are judges, like Toby Elliott, who travel from tournament to tournament, like fans for a band might.
And I've grown up with a lot of these people and spent a lot of time with them, and they're some of my dearest friends. These are our times to get together.
And there are artists here who sign cards the same way authors sign books. Right now, Jason Felix is drawing one of his characters for a fan.
This one I'm working on now is called Obnixilis. The best way I can describe him, Kiss meets Iron Maiden meets, demonic possession.
I get a text. The team is at table 917. My visions of them as victorious warriors are dashed when I find out they lost their first round.
All right, this is the start of round two. You have 50 minutes. You may begin.
The edge of the room is lined with a dozen vendors, each with hundreds of their best cards under plexiglass. Magic isn't just for playing. Collecting is huge. Harrison Bates works for one of those vendors.
Yeah, we came from LA.
Good cards can sell anywhere from under a buck to, well, the most expensive card I saw was one called Black Lotus, with a $5,400 price tag.
That's a lot of money in Magic, yeah. Hell yeah.
You can buy a pack of 15 random new cards for about $3 or $4. Wizards of the Coast, the company that makes the game, only prints so many of each card. And the most powerful cards are often the rarest. Meaning you have to buy lots of packs to find the cards you want. Or you have to purchase those cards off of someone else who bought those packs. Bates is trying to find foil cards. Shiny versions of normal cards.
I've been foiling out all weekend because I love the deck so much, you know, so I feel like the deck should feel that I love it.
In tournaments like this one, you can only use the newest cards, meaning you keep buying. There is no denying that this is an expensive hobby, and Wizards of the Coast has thought hard about how to keep players buying new cards year after year. I get a text. The team is at table 505. One of our heroes, Matt Wilcox, is battling Phil Takata, a biology teacher who brought students to the tournament. Wilcox has summoned a phoenix. But it's no match for Takata's dragon.
Oh, no.
Hey, dragon.
Yeah, that's good.
Go, dragon.
Good game.
Matt, it was a pleasure.
Our warriors aren't doing that well.
We are currently at 1 win and 3 losses. Not as great as we had hoped, but at least we're not winless.
Meaning, to achieve their goal, they can't lose any more games. But, of course, this isn't just about winning. Teammate Michelle Robertson explains.
I moved out here from Florida last year, and this is a great way to make friends with people who love the same things you do. I've met other women who are really into the game, and you don't see a lot of women at Magic tournaments, so it's really cool.
They rush off to the next battle.
Sealed challenge players. Your pairings are being posted. Please find your seats.
Look around the room, and it's hard to miss that probably 90% of the people competing are young men. It's no secret to Wizards of the Coast. Tom LaPelli used to work there, and he says that the best way to have more diverse players is to have the cards be representative. Recently, they introduced
the first transgender character in the Magic world. It was just incredibly supportive, and cause that's not a given in the gaming world, right? Like, it's not always as that accepting of a place to be.
More casual play isn't as much of an issue, but it can be hard to make tournaments welcoming for women. One woman I asked at the tournament didn't want to be recorded on tape talking about it because she was afraid of backlash from the greater gaming community. But there are more women coming to tournaments than used to, even if that number is small. I head over to the team. They've
lost four games, and they look a little glum.
We're out of contention for any sort of prize. We got here at like 9 o'clock in the morning, and it's about to be 8 o'clock?
I'm tired. You can probably tell my voice is kind of gone. I personally let my team down more than they let me down.
Even though we were not successful in our Magic domination, we still had a really great time. We met a lot of cool people.
Our heroes pack their cards into their bags, hang their heads, and head back home. Even the bravest warriors must sometimes admit defeat. For Cross Currents, I'm Jeremy Dalmas.